Hawkeye Nation podcast, HawkeyeNation.com. Andrew Downs here with you once again on a, I guess in the middle of a beautiful April week here in Iowa, certainly here in central Iowa. Hope you guys are getting out, enjoying the weather, enjoying the kind of long winter we're all coming out of. Things are starting to feel a little more normal, and obviously there's a lot of time yet and a lot of things that need to happen to get us back to where we want to be, certainly by this fall, but it feels like we're getting there, and I got to tell you, man, this weather and seeing fans at baseball games and hearing the plans for spring football practices at Kinnick Stadium and all of those things have really got me feeling good. Hopefully they have you feeling good as well. Today's going to focus on spring football. There's been a lot of content over the last 2 days between player and coach interviews. All of it is up at HawkeyeNation.com and on our YouTube page. If you missed any of the player interviews or the coach interviews from today, it's all spring football, and you can get all that. But if you don't want to watch all of it, if you want to kind of pick and choose what you hear and how you hear it, stay here with me, because that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go ahead and listen to some of these things, some of the bigger interviews especially. And as I've done several times for both basketball press conferences and a Kirk Ferentz spring football press conference, I'm going to kind of jump in and give my thoughts here and there and just kind of listen to this with you. We'll go through it together. So I think people have kind of enjoyed this in the past, and we'll see how often we do this. But I figured this week with all of this, again, just so much content, hours worth of interviews, and not everybody has time to listen to hours worth of spring football content, but you want to know what's being said, you want to be involved and informed, and I'm as excited for spring football as anybody. Maybe not spring football, because I don't think I'll be heading over to Kinnick Stadium in either of these two spring practices, but I'm as excited about this football season and this team we've got coming back, a team that we saw win 6 games in a row to end the season, got the last 2 games pulled out from under us, and while there's a lot of question marks certainly about Iowa's team, and the schedule looks very difficult, there's still a lot of hope, there's still a lot of hype, and I think Iowa's poised to be a good team and have a good season. Want to start with probably the biggest interview that happened, probably the most notable guy, the guy who, if I were to ask you, hey, who needs to step it up the most? Who does Iowa's football season, whose shoulders does Iowa's season rest upon more than anybody else? It's Spencer Petras. He had a up and down, at times good, at times awful, first campaign last year. Again, just got 8 games. Didn't have a spring football at all. Didn't have spring football. Didn't have a regular offseason in any way, shape, or form. I mean, Iowa had probably the most disruptive offseason of any team in the country last season because they were dealing with the COVID just like everybody else. They were dealing with the uncertainty of whether or not they were going to have a season just like other Big Ten and Pac-12 schools were. And then you throw all that in with the upheaval and the talk about the racial disparities and all of that in the program, the loss of Chris Doyle as the strength and conditioning coach as a result of that, and kind of the lingering questions about whether or not Kirk Ferentz was the guy to move forward, whether or not Brian Ferentz could be effective in his job anymore. And I think a lot of those questions have been answered over the past 8 months or so, and most of them have been answered in the affirmative that Kirk Ferentz is the guy to lead this forward, that Brian Ferentz can still be effective. And we'll hear from Kayvon Merriweather later in this podcast, and but I did see that he kind of talked about, yeah, it feels different around the program. It feels like things have changed. It feels like those things have taken root, and it wasn't just kind of words that were said last fall and over the summer. And that was my fear. I'll be honest. You know, I didn't know how I felt about the program and what needed to happen to move forward in the right way. I took my cues from the players and most especially the players who were making the allegations, who were telling the stories, who were brave enough to come out and talk about this stuff. And for the most part, with a few notable exceptions, those players said Kirk Ferentz was the man to lead this charge and to lead this program into a new day. And by all accounts, he has. Now, it's important to keep him and this program held accountable for continuing to do what they said they were going to do and continue to not just make changes of the things that they were doing wrong, but to be adaptable to changes as our world constantly changes, to change with the times. And hopefully we'll see that. Again, I'm sure these guys will talk about that some here, but with such a weird off season last year, Spencer Petras was in a weird position coming into the season because on one hand, he had almost no experience. He had Nate Stanley in front of him, and Nate Stanley played almost every snap, and Iowa didn't blow a lot of teams out, and they weren't blown out very often, so the snaps that Petras did get usually weren't in crunch time. They weren't in real game situations, and so Petras was kind of thrown to the wolves. He was also thrown to the wolves with, you know, some of the best skill players we've seen under Kirk Ferentz, and so while the offense was certainly, I would say, overall disappointing last season, especially the passing game, because the running game wasn't, right? Tyler Goodson's first team all Big Ten, and we'll get to him as well. But the passing game left a lot to be desired last season, and a big part of that was Spencer Petras. And he knows that. His coaches know that. We've talked a lot about it. And that being said, 2 weeks ago when Kirk Ferentz met with the media and talked about spring football, I came on here and said, man, you don't even really have to read hard between these lines that Kirk Ferentz and this coaching staff believe that Spencer Petras is their quarterback going into this fall. There will be an open quarterback competition, and if Alex Padilla or Deuce Hogan can rise up and make a case for themselves, the coaches will listen to that. I don't expect that to happen. Kirk Ferentz likes to give the benefit of the doubt to the guy who he's pegged as the starter, and a lot of the reasons he's pegged these guys as the starter is beyond what happens on the field, or at least on the game field, right? It's what happens in practice. It's how he handles himself off the field, in the locker room. It's how what kind of a leader he is at the program, how he handles himself in the classroom and in the community. Those things are all important to Kirk Ferentz, and I think they should be important to us. The bottom line is we want a quarterback who wins games, and it'd be fun if he was a little flashy, and it'd be fun if he had a little swagger like a C.J. Beathard or a Drew Tate, but the bottom line is we want a quarterback who can win games. It doesn't matter what kind of stats he puts up or who he's throwing the ball to, who he's handing the ball to, who's in front of him blocking for him. Win games, you're going to be loved. Lose games or win games closely, maybe almost lose games as we saw last year. People are going to be clamoring for your backup. So we'll get right to Spencer Petras. I think this opens up with a question from Scott Docterman of The Athletic. And again, all this video available at HawkeyeNation.com.
What was your evaluation like of yourself over the last couple of months? I'm sure you spent way too much time probably breaking down what you did right, wrong, either way. What was your evaluation on what you think you did well and maybe what you need to improve upon?
Yeah, sure. We spent a lot of time the last, 8 weeks before spring ball going over self-scout, watching the game from last year. I think the big takeaway that I've made, as well as, Coach O'Keefe and Coach Brian, is, I want to get that completion percentage up to about 65% at least. And I think that comes from, mainly two things. For me, it's taking gifts, more efficiently. So if I have an easy completion, I might as well take it. That kind of thing. And then, big thing is ball placement on these timing routes. That's an area where I know I can improve and I have the last 8 weeks. So those are kind of the two areas there. Really want to focus on, taking matchups when they present themselves.
The next question, Spencer, is from Chad Lystico.
Hi, Spencer. We talked to Kirk last week and, he said, quarterback's open competition, but he likes what you've shown so far. Do you what's your mentality? Where do you want this competition to be by May 1st?
I'm not really worried about any competition. I'm more so focused on myself, and kind of like I mentioned, I want my completion percentage to be at least 65%. I need to improve on the things I mentioned to Scott. That's kind of what I focus on. I think it's kind of silly to worry about kind of anything except how I play and the way I do things. That's my focus right now.
It's what you want to hear from your quarterback, right? You want to hear that, hey, I know it wasn't perfect, but I'm not focused on the guys behind me. I'm not focused on what the media says. I think at some point we'll hear him talk about, hey, I don't really care what the fans say about me. I'm focused on doing what I need to do to become a better player and to be a quarterback who can lead this team to some wins. He says he's improved things over the last 8 weeks. That's good to hear. Ball placement, taking what the defense gives him and not forcing things. I think that's going to be key this year. Not worried about the others. I like that. And we'll hear him say several times this 65% completion percentage. That's where he wants to be. He was around 57% a year ago. Needs to be better than that. He knows he needs to be better than that. How does he do that? Well, doesn't force things. He lets his receivers make plays. He gets them the ball quickly. And part of that's going to be Brian Ferentz and that offensive scheme kind of playing to his strengths, which I think we saw a little bit more of later in the season. And hopefully now with some spring practices and just more time over the summer together as a unit, as a coaching group, everybody together, it's going to benefit everybody getting this offense going and kind of doing it under Spencer Petras.
The next question, Spencer, is from Tom Kakert.
Hey, Spencer. Was wondering, you know, during your film study, did you look at other guys and kind of learn from their film study? And also, what's it feel like to have spring this year because you didn't get that last year, and how important is that for you?
Yeah, so, you know, your first question, I watched a good amount of Mac Jones and him working in Alabama's offense because I think he does a lot of really, really good stuff, you know, that I can kind of try and emulate in my game. So that was a guy I really studied, you know, the first 8 weeks of the semester. And then, yeah, spring's great. You know, spring's an opportunity for us older guys to, you know, continue to develop our chemistry and really work on our offense. And really it's 15 practices to just improve. And then for young guys, you know, a lot of time, this is their first real opportunity to get some real reps with our offense, you know, learn the system and learn how to execute efficiently in our system. So it's been great. It's awesome to be out here, and, you know, we need to continue to stay vigilant with COVID so we can continue to practice.
Spencer, the next question from Scott Docterman.
You know, Spencer, there was a real clear line between when you got the ball out of your hands fast, like 2.5 seconds, and then afterwards, when you had it out of your hands in 2.5 seconds or less, you completed, you know, 66% of your passes. But after that, it kind of went from there. Was that a figment almost of a script or by design? And is that next step just kind of developing more comfort and rapport with some of your receivers?
I think anytime you get the ball out of your hands fast, it's a good thing for our offense. You know, Tom Brady's kind of the king of that. Like, I forget what playoff run it was. It might have been his last Super Bowl in New England. I think in the playoffs, he averaged 2.2 seconds getting the ball out of his hand. And I mean, obviously, like, you know, if you're getting the ball fast, it means it's not a super deep route. So those are going to be easier to complete. So, you know, it's not an exact science, but generally in a concept, and just me as a player, you know, is if I'm getting the ball out on time, which is, you know, usually depending on the concept, you know, around 2.5 or lower, then we're going to be in good shape. You know, you get in trouble if you hold on to the ball too long, you know, take multiple shuffles at the top of my drop. Again, depending on the concept and the coverage, but yeah, the faster you get it out, you know, the better shape we're going to be in.
Really like hearing Spencer talk about the guys who he's looked up to, the guys who he's watching, the guys he's paying attention to, and even if they seem aspirational, that's what you want in your quarterback. Again, you want a guy who wants to be the best. He's going to learn from the best, so he goes and watches Mac Jones from Alabama, who wasn't the best quarterback in college football last year, did have the best receivers in college football, but you know, Spencer Petras won't be throwing to the Heisman winner. But it's good to know that he's paying attention to those guys. And then Tom Brady getting the ball out fast. Again, I just like that he's aspiring to be the best, even if he's, you know, even if that feels like a high bar to clear.
We'll take two more questions for Spencer Petras. And the first is from Leah Van.
Yeah, a lot of fans have been kind of critical of you in your first season. And I was wondering what your response to their criticisms are, and, you know, you were third in the Big Ten in passing yards.
Yeah, it's all right. I got to sit behind Nate for 2 years, and I've seen our fans love Iowa football, and they just want the best for Iowa football. And you know, it is what it is. You know, I've had my my fair share of experience, you know, watching Nate deal with it, and then obviously you know dealing with everyone has their own opinion, and that's okay. And I'm not really no offense to the fans, I could care less about what they have to say about my performance. I'm focused on my performance and kind of things we mentioned, like improvement and having a great spring.
Wait, to follow up on that, I saw on Instagram you got your second vaccination, and I was wondering how you were feeling. And if you have a message to fans.
Yeah, I'd say I obviously recommend the vaccination so we can continue to move forward as a society and beat this virus. I feel great, feel good. And, you know, about 2 weeks from now, I should be home free with this thing. So definitely recommend it.
Yeah, go get vaccinated if you can. If you haven't already, do that. Again, just kind of nice to hear Spencer Petras. It'll be interesting to hear this quarterback competition and how it moves forward here as we go further into the spring and as we get our first kind of look at the guys at Kinnick Stadium in just a couple of weeks from now. Matt Hankins also met with the media here. Let's go right into the cornerback's media availability.
Yeah, Matt, I think you might end up becoming the first Iowa player to ever to start games over 5 years. What was that process like for you in late December and early January when you're deciding whether to give the NFL a shot or to return, and why ultimately did you decide to come back to Iowa?
I decided to come back because, you know, it's still a lot of my game I can work on, and you know my weight and whatnot, being more physical and things like that. So, you know, I decided why not stay another year. You know, I have the opportunity to, so I can improve. The chemistry with the team was good last year, so it can only get better this year. So that was the whole idea, the whole plan.
The next question, Matt, is from Tom Kickert.
Hey, Matt, how much did you lean on Coach Parker when you were making that decision to come back, and what was his advice to you during that process?
Really, it was, I didn't lean too much, to be honest. It was really just between me and my family and my trainer back home. But, you know, his advice was whatever I did, he was going to support it. You know, when I told him that I was coming back, you know, he was just extremely happy that I was coming back. You know, I mean, I'll be able to help out with the players and, you know, things like that, I guess.
Matt Hankins coming back is huge. I mean, what a boost for this this defense. What a boost for the defensive backfield. And, you know, hopefully he will be able to really improve his draft stock and leave this season. You know, come back for a good reason, right? Improve his draft stock and get drafted high next season after leading Iowa to a really good season in his fifth year, as Scott Doctorman pointed out there, that he has started games in five different years. In the backfield there with him will be Riley Moss. Let's go to his media availability.
Started by talking to Matt Hankins, and obviously he's a guy who had a choice to make this offseason with the bonus year, or he could go off and pursue that NFL dream. What does it mean to you guys to have him back and have his leadership and have so many starts under his belt to join you guys and have this experience backfield or defensive backfield?
It's really nice. You know, having us, I guess you call it a super senior. I don't know what you'd call it, but it's nice having him back, having his leadership for sure. Like you said, because you can never have too many leaders out in the field. So it's nice to have him back there. Even at corner, you know, he kind of leads the corners a little bit, me and him. So it's nice having him out there. Plus we got Jack, Dane. So we got some kids back, which is nice.
Yeah, this defensive backfield is going to be something. I think the linebackers are going to be great. I like the ends. The defensive line will be interesting. That's got to obviously come together, certainly at that tackle position. But these D-backs and what they return, the amount of experience they return, I'm excited to see. You know, and I've talked about this, I think, before. Cornerback, for whatever reason, is my favorite football position. I'd rather, like, if I could be anything, it'd be a lockdown, speedy corner. I think they're the coolest guys. I think it's fun to watch them do pick sixes and just interceptions in general. I think are maybe the coolest play in football. So there's a big part of me that wishes I was nearly as athletic as any of these guys. And I love watching Iowa's defensive backfield, especially under Phil Parker and what he has done over the decades now, but really over the last couple of years in developing these guys, putting them into the NFL, it's really become a pipeline, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, Riley, over the last 4 years, Iowa leads Power Five programs in total number of interceptions and all programs and interceptions per game. What is it about the defense that enables you guys to put yourself in that kind of position? Is it partially the geometry that Phil Parker preaches all the time, or is there something specific that beyond that, that enables you guys to be in the right place, the right time so many times?
Yeah. I would say the biggest thing is, you know, like you said, geometry, but then it's also, he preaches the little things. So, you know, where you got to be, your technique, your fits, where you're reading, where your key's at. And that's a big thing. Personally for me, that's why I've gotten so many picks, is because of, you know, just doing little things, and you'll end up in the right spot at the right time, as long as you just keep doing the right things over and over again.
And again, just love that Iowa D-backs have been in the right place at the right time more often than not over several years. And, it's just so much fun. I'm just so excited for football. I know it's so far away. It's hard to think about, but I'm so excited. Let's get to Kayvon Merriweather, who I mentioned earlier, and hear what he has to say.
Kayvon, you were kind of one of the leading voices last summer when everything was going on, and I was wondering what improvements you have seen specifically in this program since last summer.
I think it's been major improvement. I think the way that we kind of stride on being together, I think, and focus on everybody's differences as well. I think that's something that we really push towards. And also, like, letting the players have a voice on the team as well. I think we have a little bit more voice, a little bit more say, and we can, if we see anything that's going wrong or anything or any change, I think we're more confident to go to our coaches and actually talk to them about those issues and see change within the program as well. I think that's one thing that's definitely changed within our program.
Again, so good to hear that. And from a guy who was outspoken a year ago and has been outspoken his entire career at Iowa, and I'm sure we'll hear more and more from Kayvon Merriweather, but just good to hear that, you know, from within the program, things feel different, things have changed, things have improved, and the players can feel it. It's obvious there. So loved hearing that. We'll go quickly here to then stay on the defense, and Jack Kerner also met with the media. We'll hit him before we hit up the coaches.
Yeah, Jack, what can you guys do for an encore? You bring back everybody. You were one of the most prolific intercepting groups in the last handful of years in college football. Is there, in what ways can you collectively as a unit improve and probably help an inexperienced front line?
I think just the emphasis that we do place on turnovers is a big part of it. You know, the less we're out there, the less long drives we have to sustain are obviously going to help us. And, you know, the front guys, they help us out a lot, getting pressure, not making us stay in coverage as long. So, you know, it's our job to kind of reciprocate that back to them. And, you know, if it's taking them a little bit longer to get to the quarterback, then it's our job to stay in coverage a little bit longer and also, you know, come up and fill those run gaps. But I don't foresee necessarily any issues. We got a lot of great guys, and Coach Bell, Coach Parker, you know, they do a great job of, you know, inserting guys in, and Paul's doing a great job.
Are there any specific ball skills that you guys work on that kind of helps you, you know, with interceptions, maybe that, I don't know if other programs do or don't do, but just something that you know that you see that works, that helps you guys be, you know, able to intercept as many passes as you do?
In our individual drills, you know, we do place a big, you know, precedence on, you know, getting the ball thrown to us and focusing on catching the ball. And, but the biggest thing that I think translates over is that we have a scoreboard, if you will, about getting interceptions, forced fumbles, picking up the ball after an incomplete pass, just things about that. Just to kind of get guys into the habit of getting to the ball. And so that's kind of the thing that we've, I think about 5 years ago, the coaches say they placed an emphasis on, and the results have obviously transferred over.
love that interior competition, right? The these are very competitive guys, and you might as well use that to your advantage. Let's get them, you know, some friendly competition in between each other, amongst each other, to see who's who's the best D-back on the team. It'll be fun to keep an eye on that throughout this year. Well, we've heard from a bunch of defensive players. Let's go right to their coach. It's Phil Parker, one of the best coaches in America, one of the best coordinators in America, a guy that I think we're all lucky to have as our defensive coordinator, as Hawkeye fans. And we'll hear what he had to say. This was from today. Those player interviews were yesterday on Tuesday. These coach interviews were today, Wednesday, April 7th. And let's get right into it.
Well, it's been a while since we've talked here, and since the end of the season, obviously, we lost, didn't play our last two games, which is unfortunate because I thought we were playing our best ball at the end of the year. But it gave us an opportunity at least to prepare all the way through the chance to play in the bowl game and check out some of our other players. Obviously, we lost some guys coming into the springtime here. This is going, you know, 20 plus years of going into a new spring here for me. And up front, you know, we lost some guys. You know, Chauncey, I think, was a really good player. He's going to have a chance playing the NFL along with Nixon and Heflin, obviously. And, you know, you look at Austin Schulte, that played pretty well here as a senior, and Jacobus was another guy that we're really proud to have up front. And then in the linebacker depth, you know, we lost, you know, Nick Neiman, which was a pretty productive player there for us, and obviously Barrington Wade at safety. And very fortunate in the back end here to, you know, keep everybody here. Matt decided to stay another year. I was thrilled about that. Gives us some leadership back there, and he's kind of been through the routine. He's played a lot of games here and can give a lot of insight to some of the corners that are coming up and some of the other guys in the back end. So very pleased to where we're at. Looking forward to, you know, finishing up. The first 4 days of practice have been really good, I thought, of getting guys out there and getting some work. You know, we'll have some guys, I think, is having some flexibility and playing different positions. So it's really good. I see a lot of growth in some of the guys in the back end with Castro. I think he's done a really good job here in the last couple of days of practice. And looked at Harris, he's done a good job. And Terry Roberts is another guy that's really stepped up a corner. So the depth is kind of back. I know we got Riley and Hankins back at corner, but with those two guys, I think it's really going to be really interesting to see how it all pans out, because you got Dane back there and obviously Merriweather and Jack. And so very pleased where we're at right now. I guess I'll leave that open to questions for you guys right now.
Thanks, Coach. If anyone out there has a question for Phil Parker, please throw your hand up by clicking on the reactions button at the bottom of your screen. First question this afternoon, Coach Parker, is from Scott Docterman.
Hey, Phil, how are you?
I'm doing great. You?
I'm doing well myself. Thanks for asking. I was wondering to know a couple of redshirt freshmen, YA Black got in a few games last year, kind of probably more out of necessity than anything else, but seems to have incredible size. And then Logan Jones as well. Just seem to break all these weight room records, which is rare for his age. What do you see from those two, and where do they kind of fit in right now?
Very impressed. You know, Black is going to play. He could probably play outside and inside. But right now, we've got put inside as a tackle. I think he's done a really good job, really mature. You know, it was nice to have him in there last year. You know, he was a little young, but, you know, gave him a chance to get out there. And now I think it's really good for him during the spring to take a up row. He's lined up as the number one right now, and we're very happy what direction he's going into. And Logan Jones is a guy that's very powerful and very strong. You know, he's learning the position. You know, there's some good plays the other day in 9-on-7 that I really enjoyed him doing. I say probably a little bit thicker. I don't want to throw this name out there, but it kind of reminds me a little bit of Mitch King as far as taking up some space inside. Really like the way he's going there. Obviously, Zach is back at the defensive end, so we're fortunate there. And Wagner will probably be at the other end. And then Noah Shannon at our tackle, other tackle spot. So very pleased. And some young guys in there. You look at Craig playing defensive end for us. Herkett, I think, is a good guy in there too. So really got some young guys' experience. They got a lot of growth, and I think it's really going to look, I'm looking forward to the next four or five practices to see where they are and before we finish up the last three or four. So we've got some time left.
Yeah, Phil, in some ways, I think we were robbed a little bit when Mono took Jack Campbell off the field for the first few games, because when he was in the game, last few games, he seemed to really tip it from the plays he made, probably made more impactful plays per snap than anybody else I saw. What's his upside? And then also, where do you see Justin Jacobs fitting? Can he play Leo when you move to Leo sometimes, or is he specifically an inside backer?
Good thing. Let's go back to answer your first question here about Jack Campbell. Obviously, it's a very competitive player. We lost him for the first two. Doesn't make a difference yet. There are some other things in that game that could have helped us, you know, besides not having him in there. And just talking about, we could have did a little bit better job of coaching the back end. But to say that, I think there's an object for both of these guys over here. You talk about Justin Jacobs of playing. I think he can play outside linebacker. I think he can play the will backer. I think we got Campbell. He can play the mic. I think he can play the will. And Seth Benson, I think he can play the mic or the will. So right now we're playing them like right and left linebacker, slide them over. I think that we were talking about this today. It was Justin. He has a lot of ability, and he's improving every day. And I'm excited to see where he goes. And, you know, do we play more 40 defense with him in there, or do we play more, you know, sub package in there with our cash? And, you know, time will tell, personnel, game to game, and who's the best players to be on the field to help stop your opponents.
Good few minutes there from defensive coordinator Phil Parker. I love the Jack Campbell Q&A there. I mean, I think he's going to be that dude. He's going to be the next guy, if he's not already kind of assuming that role, the next, you know, great Hawkeye linebacker. I'm excited to see what he will do this year. We'll switch from defense to offense, and quarterback coach, former offensive coordinator, Ken O'Keefe.
Spencer, there was kind of a clear dividing line on timing when he threw the ball with inside of 2.5 seconds, it was complete 2/3 of the time. If it was after that, it went down dramatically. What was kind of the reasoning for that? Was that more because he was able to get into a rhythm quicker in that 2.5 second period? And what ways can you help him grow, you know, with 3-4 second type routes that either may develop or he may need to use because of pass rush and stuff like that?
Well, you know, if we're going to use 4 seconds, we're going to have to get a few more people up there in front as far as the offensive line's concerned. You know, we'll have to play maybe with, 12 or 13, but, you know, we'd want to stay away from that length of time for sure. Your question involves a couple of different things, but it's a great question, Scott. Number one, you know, all different phases of our pass game are built off of time. You know, the quick game, has basically a time allotment. The 5-step game, there's a quick 5 game, there's play action, there's a 7-step. Play action, there's 5-step play action, and there's a 5-step drop back too. So, you know, all of these, got to be measured out and try to build the clock in the quarterback's head so that we can get the ball out of our hands on time. And I think everybody at this point, 2021 for sure knows that, the less you hold on to the ball, the quicker you get it out of your hands, the better chance you have of completing a pass. And you've heard me, I know, talk about it before, especially on timing routes. We'd like the ball to be out of the quarterback's hand and at least a third of the way to the receiver by the time he comes out of his cut, for it to be, where we want it to be in our offense. That's the gold standard, versus zone coverage with timing routes. Man to man coverage changes the whole deal to a certain degree, but The quarterback's going to have to use his feet to move through things a little bit quicker. But, you know, a guy like Spencer, and I think, you know, ultimately this is probably where you're headed with your question, with a year under his belt, should be able to see the field, should be able to see what's going on a little bit better, move through his progressions faster and deliver the ball with a little bit more confidence, than the previous year.
Heard a lot of that same stuff from Spencer Petras early in this podcast yesterday in the interviews. You could tell he and his coach are kind of in lockstep about what he needs to do, what they need to do, what the offense needs to look like for them to have success. And so good to hear they're on the same page. And much like I said with Kirk Ferentz, it sounds like Ken O'Keefe is, you know, pretty solidly expecting Spencer Petras to be his starting quarterback come this fall. Let's go back to Coach O'Keefe.
The next question, Ken, is from Chad Leistico.
Hey, Chad.
Hey, Ken. Good to see you.
Good to be seen.
I knew you had a joke in there somewhere. How are you divvying up the reps between your quarterbacks this spring? What's the plan percentage-wise, guys with ones, et cetera? Because obviously there's a lot of interest in more than just Spencer here on the outside.
Well, you know, we're working our way through, seven on seven and team. We're trying to, divide it up right now to get a feel for what some of the other guys can do as well. So, you know, we've been splitting it the first three practices and changed it up a little bit in the fourth, and probably change it up even a little bit more here in our upcoming practice tomorrow.
Ken, the next question is from Leah Van.
Hi, Ken. I'm Leah. I'm the new reporter for the Cedar Rapids Gazette. It's nice to meet you.
All right, Leah. It's nice to meet you.
And, my question is, I think last week Ferentz was talking about how teams with veteran quarterbacks going into last year kind of had an advantage because, you know, they didn't have spring football. And I was wondering, you know, how does spring football provide an opportunity for you to maybe work with Spencer Petras a little bit more? Like, what are the advantages of having it, and what does he need to work on?
Well, you know, the crazy part about last year is these guys virtually had to train on their own. You know, we could meet with them on the playbook, and, you know, we had a lot of great meetings on Zoom. We even had some guest appearances from Rick Stanzi, Brad Banks, Drew Tate that came on and kind of helped some of the guys out with, some of their experiences. But on the field stuff, they had to do on their own. And one of the problems that you have when they train themselves is you can't be there to correct the mistakes, and see what's going on. So if you don't watch out, they'll end up training themselves incorrectly. And, you know, I learned this a long time ago, where when I coached in Division III, because the guys all had to go home and work jobs in the summer, and, you know, they pay for their loans and do, you know, get spending money for the next year. And I would try to develop a manual for, you know, for those guys to work off of, but I couldn't be there. And so a lot of times when they came back to start preseason, they had trained themselves a little bit, differently than I wanted them to. And I couldn't do anything about it initially because I wasn't there to observe it. So I had to almost start over with some guys. So, that was the number one thing we were working against in the off season. And it showed up a little bit. It showed up a little bit our preseason. I'm trying to remember which one, and we started one, then stopped, and then started another one. But we had to train some stuff out of our guys before we could get back and feel comfortable with what we're doing. And I think probably saw some of that in the first the first couple of ball games.
You know, I don't have a lot of expert commentary to add to what Ken O'Keefe is talking about there, but just good to kind of hear that perspective on what specifically they missed out on spring football. I mean, I think it's easy to say, well, obviously they missed out on things, but what was that, and what did it look like? And I think that's a really good point of, hey, they're out there training and they're learning things, and we're not there to immediately correct those things. So if it's not a few days before we realize they're doing something incorrectly, or maybe not even until they get back to campus for fall camp, and the you know, both preseasons, as Ken O'Keefe referenced there, we didn't know they were doing some things incorrectly, and it probably set them back a little bit to have to restart things from scratch in several cases. And so to have this here, to have spring football, to have everybody together for another year, I think is just going to be beneficial for everybody. Moving on, we'll just spend a few more minutes here with the coaches' interviews. I really want to get to this one because a big talking point last summer was, what does this program do without Chris Doyle? He's been the strength and conditioning coach for 20 years. He's put a lot of guys in the NFL. A lot of those guys were, you know, two-star recruits out of rural Iowa who were played quarterback or receiver or tight end in high school, and he made them into NFL offensive linemen. You know, the body change that we see from guys, a lot of that was credited to Chris Doyle. It's a reason he was one of the highest paid, if not the highest paid assistant in all of college football, and got a lot of credit for the success that Iowa has had under Kirk Ferentz, not just on the field, but also in putting guys into the league. Now he's gone. That's all gone. It's all over, right? And so what does this mean? What does this program look like without him? What does the strength and conditioning program look like without him? And Raymond Braithwaite is the guy who stepped into that role a year ago. I don't know when they officially gave him that title. I remember Kirk was asked about it at some point in the last few weeks, and kind of said, yes, he is the guy, even if we hadn't actually made that announcement. And so I'm interested to hear what Raymond Braithwaite has to say here as now he finally gets these guys, because this is his time of the year, right? I mean, after the bowl game and before spring football, it's his offseason workout program. It's getting the guys there on campus now for these few weeks. And then what do they do between the end of spring football in a handful of weeks, a month from now or so, and getting back onto campus for fall camp? This is when these guys make strides based on what he sets out for them. This is when his coaching is probably most important. So interested to hear what Raymond Braithwaite, Iowa strength and conditioning coach, has to say.
First, I'd like to thank you guys for giving us the opportunity to meet and to talk about our program. I would also like to recognize the other members of our strength staff. You know, I have myself as the director, Cody Myers, Cole Helly, Drew Heitland, Ben Morris, and John Engelbrecht are the other members of the staff. They have done an excellent job in assisting and adding to the development of our team. We're also very excited to be, you know, starting up spring football. Prior to spring football, we were in a 8-week training phase where our main focus was developing our strength and our speed. And we feel as though we were successful in doing that. We had to make strides in this area in order to, you know, really take advantage of this phase that we're in as far as our overall team development. It's also significant because that training phase was the first uninterrupted block of training that we've had in the last 11 months. So, you know, we place a great importance on this window of time for the overall development of our team, not just physically, but also in the way that our team interacts, the way they communicate, the way they grow together as a team. And our guys have done an excellent job in all of these areas. In the weight room, our guys have raised the standard for themselves physically. I was thinking about guys like Tyler Linderbaum, Seth Benson, Jack Campbell, Kayvon Merriweather. All these guys have set the tone with their leadership and their approach to training, and that's rubbed off on their teammates. Now where we're at in terms of our preparation, we have to take the things that we've developed over the last 8 weeks and transfer them to our on-field preparation. And with that, I will open up for any questions you guys might have.
Ray, the next question is from Chad Lystico.
Hi, Ray. Great to talk to you. You singled out a couple guys there at the beginning in your opening statement on identifying leaders. you know, this is kind of your first full year doing this. How do you go about finding leaders? I know that's a huge process for Iowa football. And is the Hawkeye Championship still a thing?
The leaders, to answer the first question, leaders tend to be kind of rise to the top on their own. And the team tends to choose who the leaders are. We help mold the leaders, and the leaders that the team has chosen this year are an excellent group of young men. The Hawkeye Championship is still a thing. It's a player driven competition, and those leaders make it what it is. And the benefits from doing the Hawkeye Championship only come because through the development of leadership. And when I talk about leaders, I'm just not talking about the guys I listed off, but we want horizontal leadership across the team. We want freshmen up through seniors to hold each other accountable. And that's the only way we're going to really improve and take the next step.
The next question, Ray, is from Tom Cakert.
Hey, Ray. Wanted to ask you, you know, when you take over the more of the leadership role with the strength and conditioning, you probably had your own ideas, some thoughts. What sort of things did maybe you change in the operation, either in the winter conditioning or overall, that were different from what Chris Doyle did?
Good question. The changes I made were more logistical. I think the COVID made us see things differently in the way we were forced to do things differently. And so the way we group guys in the weight room, the way we do some things pre and post workout are different. Like our main principles and the things that really work to develop our guys aren't changing and haven't changed. Those are things that have been proven over time to work. So I didn't see a need to reinvent the wheel. But it's just more minor things that were changed.
Ray, the next question is from Scott Docterman.
Yeah, Ray, along those lines, I mean, Iowa's program has had a demonstrated success rate, especially in developing players to go on to the next level, maybe higher than most programs. What have you done, or as far as the Iowa way in the weight room, did you decide to keep it kind of the similar path because of the success rate and development mentally as well as physically?
The things that have led to success for current and former players, I mean, those things are universal across sports, like accountability, self-discipline, showing up on time, being ready to work. I don't think those things are necessarily unique to Iowa football, but we definitely harp on them and hone on those things and value those things and those principles. And those things cannot change, like I said before. And the guys believe in those things, and they want to be held accountable. They want to be pushed in the weight room. And so that's what we're going to continue to do.
Ray, the next question is from Tom Cakert.
Ray, you know, generally, over time following this program, you've seen guys that kind of take that leap in the weight room in the winter, and then it starts to translate in the spring on the field. And you kind of, there's a correlation there. What can you think of some guys that maybe kind of took that leap this winter that you think might be in line for a big spring?
Yeah. Yeah. And we're one thing about the spring is, you know, this is our first spring ball in 2 years, right? So I kind of lose perspective. I remember walking out to practice, our first practice. I'm walking next to Tyler Goodson. I'm like, T-Good, okay, you ready to go? Back in spring ball. And looks at me and is like, Coach, this is my first spring ball. I have no idea. I haven't been down this road before. So just guys like that, everyone thinks of him as, you know, going to eventually be a three-year starter. But even someone that is highly regarded as Tyler Goodson has a ton of room for improvement, just having this window of time to improve on the field. So I think it's across the board. Like this window of time that we didn't have last year, having it this year, I think the amount of growth, potential growth for this team is exponential because we're so young. You know, you go around and ask how many guys have done spring football. If you got the entire team, probably 60% of the hands would go up. This is their first spring football. And that's, you know, that can't be discounted.
It's wild to think that Tyler Goodson has never gone through spring football. I mean, he's essentially going to be, as Coach just alluded to, a three-year starter this fall. but wasn't on campus as an early enrollee. Started, you know, the last, what, handful of games as a freshman. Didn't have spring ball a year ago, and now finally gets it. It's going to be fun to see how this team progresses, and I like a lot of what I heard from Coach Braithwaite there and what he's got. You know, just kind of the mindset, the mentality, the focus that you expect from a Kirk Ferentz staff member and a member of Iowa, or the leader now of Iowa's strength and conditioning program. Spring football is here. It's a lot of fun, a lot going on. We have it covered at HawkeyeNation.com. Again, all this video, and there's a lot more than what we covered right here, is available at HawkeyeNation.com. And I appreciate you guys listening. I hope you're as excited about this football season as I am, because we're going to be talking about it a lot over the next several months as we gear up for the 2021 campaign. Thank you for listening. Go Hawks!